And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. And tonight, we are blessed again with having Kathleen Sims. And I really enjoy having Kathleen on the show. She has, you know, a lovely energy, and she likes to talk about juicy life. And, you know, how much more exciting is that? So welcome, Kathleen.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
So, just recently, you participated in writing a story for a book called Wake Up Women, Be Happy, Healthy, and Wealthy, a guidebook. And you have a very lovely story here about, you know, getting a life and how your daughter sort of helped you on that. Why don't you talk a little bit about that experience?
Oh, it just... I would love to talk about it. It completely changed my life. You mean the experience of the Get a Life that I wrote about?
Yes.
That story, yes. I got married when I was 16 and had kids before I was out of high school. So I had had dreams of, you know, being a counselor and a therapist in life. And instead, I got married and had children. So basically, I, you know, gave up my dream and devoted myself to raising my kids. And then felt like once my kids are grown and gone, I probably would be too old to go to school and ever go back and do that. And what happened actually is when I was one of those moms that would make sure I was home at 3 o'clock when my kids got home from school, and, you know, hot dog lady and all the rest. And when my children were about 13 and 15, I started doing some personal growth work, and my 15-year-old started doing some personal growth work also. And at that time, like I said, I was just working part-time, and I was a suburban housewife, and I was overweight. And when I did work, I pretty much just worked a job that, you know, paid by the hour and helped, you know, buy new carpeting and that kind of thing. I didn't love what I was doing at all. And my daughter and I were in this volunteer program working, and the trainer actually interviewed my daughter in front of 200 people. She was 15 at the time, and asked her what was in the way of her completely being of service. And she stood up in front of 250 people, and I was in the group, and said that her weight was in the way. At the time, she was about 30 pounds overweight. And he started asking her, you know, more questions in front of everybody, and she blurts out that she can't lose weight until her mother does. And everybody turned around and looked at me. Oh my God, I was so embarrassed. And basically, you know, she continued to say things like she couldn't pass her mother, and then I had to succeed first, and then she could. And I was across the room listening to this, and I was just in a state of shock of what was coming out of her mouth. I had no idea she felt or thought those things. So on the way home, we were driving home, and I basically told her she shouldn't talk in public like that about me, and if she wanted to lose weight, that her body had nothing to do with mine, and to leave me alone, basically. And this particular daughter was very assertive about her thoughts, and we argued all the way home about this. And we came in the house, and we continued arguing, and she started pressing me that I was hiding my power behind my 40 pounds of overweight. And I kept telling her to be quiet, that she didn't know what she was talking about. Oh, my God, it was one of these traumas for both of us, I have to say. We were, you know, yelling at each other. And it went on for like an hour and a half. And I kept telling her to leave me alone. If she really loved me, she would love me just the way I was. And she kept saying, "You don't understand. That's not what I'm saying to you. What I'm saying to you is I know who you really are, and you're not acting like who you really are. And you're hiding your small, you're hiding your power behind your weight and acting like you're small, and you're not." And she was really angry at me about it. And in this exchange, she was yelling that I should get a life, meaning that I should go out in the world and do something that she saw me as powerful and capable. And I said, "You mean you don't, you know, appreciate me staying home for you kids?" And she said, "You have to get a life. We want to not come home after school. We want to go be with our friends, and we have to come home because you're waiting for us." And finally, in one of those moments when she said, really loudly and intensely, "You know, I know who you are behind all that, and you're a powerful person, and I'm sick of you hiding it. There was this moment where I felt like my brain had been lasered. It's only happened a few times in my life, and it was one of these where it broke through my defenses somehow and went straight to the core of my being, of hearing what she said in this moment as being the truth about me. And it was not a truth about me I'd ever looked at deeply nor truthfully. I think playing small and hoping nobody would notice. You know, I didn't want people to expect a lot out of me, and so then at the level I performed looked really good. And in that moment when it felt like it lasered my brain and I really heard what she said, I was speechless. And I actually didn't talk for 3 days. I mean, my brain just got completely quiet, which never happens. And there were no words that I could put to what had happened. And I felt almost even kind of dizzy in my body because something had so pierced through the identity that I had put together of how I saw myself in the world. And from that moment on, I never saw myself the same again. And what proceeded to unfold was that I released 40 pounds effortlessly without dieting or anything in the next 6 weeks after that. And it just, the weight just started melting off of me. I began to eat naturally with what my body wanted for the first time in my life. It was like it just pierced right down to the natural essence of who I was, both in the personal power level, my identity level, and also my connection of being connected to my body and its natural signals about eating and so forth. And as a result of that, I actually went to, Denise and I had taken a seminar together that was a seminar for losing weight naturally, and both of us gained weight instead of lost weight. And that exchange happened not very long after that seminar that we thought we had failed at. And when I had melted off these 40 pounds, I went to that company and I said, I didn't lose during the seminar when you were teaching the principles, but when I had this experience, all of it just naturally kicked in, because eating in that way was eating naturally according to your body's needs. And I said, I understand the core of my being, you know, what that's like, what that experience is. I've released all this weight down to my natural size. And I said, I'm going to teach this seminar. And thank goodness it happened to be a company that didn't go by what your resume was. It actually went by what results can you produce, both with being successful with the seminar principles, but also I started out as a volunteer, and each level moved up and up and up by producing results at each level, and became a seminar leader in 6 months, teaching that seminar, traveling across the country, teaching personal power and self-esteem to women.
Nice.
And you know, and during that changeover, I also, you know, went to both my kids and said, if I take this job, I'll be working nights, I'll be traveling out of the state. You know, it goes against my value system. I think I should be home for your kids. And they were both, oh my gosh, you look so beautiful and you look so happy and you're supposed to be teaching and we don't need you to stay home and wait for us anymore. We really want you to be that person in the world. And I've never looked back since. Changed my life incredibly.
And what was the experience like? I see that Wake Up Women, Be Happy, Healthy, and Wealthy has hit the number one on the bestsellers list in books for women. I mean, what was the experience like for you writing for this particular book?
That was so incredible. I have to say it was a first-time experience, and I'll explain what I mean by that, in this particular way. You know, men are really taught to work on teams, and women are not. Women are taught to run families, but they're not really taught to work on teams together. And years in the past, I actually taught teamwork to in business, but this was a whole different experience. It we turned in our stories. This was a co-authored book with about 40 different very wonderful and powerful women. None of us knew each other. We all lived all over the country, so we never met each other. And we turned our stories in for them to compile them into this wonderful book. And each of the stories are stories of how each of these women had a personal breakthrough in their own life and what that meant to them. And during that year, before the book came out, we had teleconference calls on the telephone. And the three women that were the compilers and, you know, that it was their dream to do this book, they taught classes, teleconference classes for us for free on how to market ourselves, how to market the book, how to do things like, you know, press releases, how to participate in your community in benefits, how to be more engaged, you know, out there and using the book as a tool to benefit, you know, ourselves and others. Some of them did cancer walks and gave a lot of the books away and that kind of thing. And it gives me chills even to talk about this, because the women were each in their own way and then came together so synergistically, and they were so inspiring and collaborative in a way that I'd never collaborated before in my life, to the degree that we did it and the height that we did it. So things happened like, one person would write a wonderful press release for themselves, and they would send it to everybody.
Nice.
Somebody else had, you know, cards and logos made to go on their website and be for promotional material, and she sent it to everybody, and we could take anything off of anybody's and use it for ourselves and our own businesses individually. Some of them had radio shows or, you know, talk shows or different things, and they would invite each other to them. So there was, it wasn't about competition at all, and a lot of us, most of us are in similar businesses, of, you know, the helping professions, and they were just truly the essence of collaboration, not competition.
Nice.
And that was such a different experience for me than 20, 25 years prior when I worked at that seminar company. It was actually a company of all women, and we were like a family, but we were very competitive with other companies of like nature. We weren't competitive within the organization, you know, that I taught for, but they were always afraid somebody else would get their secrets, which is the old model of, you know, marketing and sales and so forth. Like, don't let the competition know what you're doing, and they were always afraid somebody's going to take the material. And And it wasn't unique to that business. That is what people's conscious level was at that time, 20 years ago. And this was so the new model of there's enough for everyone, and, you know, business is abundant, and that we can support each other to be successful, and it doesn't take anything away from us as individuals. And I had a year-long experience with these women on the teleseminars, and then after the teleseminars were completed, after 12 weeks, we had support calls, and they continued throughout the year. And then when the book was going to be released, everybody got a hold of everybody they knew, and we all asked for support from our circles of influence. And, you know, and just about overnight, the book hit number one on the bestseller list for women's issues. And it was, and it hit number 7 on the overall bestseller list, and that was the week of the inauguration, and 4 of the books ahead of us were about Obama. So I think we did pretty good even on the overall to hit number 7.
Absolutely. Wow. So you mentioned, you know, women's issues. What have you seen as the primary issues facing women today?
You know, that it certainly is different than, I mean, at my age, I've seen several generations here of women, and, you know, when Women's Lib hit, I was in my early 30s, and watching the evolution from there till now has been such an interesting unfolding. I've been very thrilled that I've lived in the time frame that I've lived in to see the changes that have happened from the 60s until now for men and women. And certainly we see such a higher percentage of single women, of women having children at an older age. You know, when I was 17 years old is when birth control pills came out, and that changed women's lives forever.
Yeah.
It suddenly and in an instant overnight put us completely at choice about we could have children when we wanted, we could have children or not have children, we could get married when we wanted, we weren't on such a time frame.
Mm-hmm.
And women started making choices in a completely different way. And as it now has evolved to women of today, there certainly are some places where we'll see the glass ceiling, that's for sure, but there sure are a lot of places where women have broken through that glass ceiling,
mm-hmm.
that women can be seen as, you know, holding very high-level jobs and still be able to have a family and have children and have it all work. And that, when I was in my early 30s, women just basically didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to work for that organization where I traveled across the country, I had two friends, and all three of us had owned our own businesses. And this is about 10 years, I guess, later. I owned my own business. They did also. We all had husbands, households, and kids. And we got together in a support group and met once a week for 20 years. And our intention was to be models for one another and support one another, that women can have it all. And this was, we started doing this, I think it was about in the early 80s, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, women really didn't, they thought, well, I can have a great job or I can get married.
Mm.
Or, we did not have models of women that had successful households and had good jobs. There weren't very many women around like that. And we decided we were each that, and we were going to support each other to continue to be that and not buy into other people's belief systems about that women can't have it all.
Mm-hmm.
And I see now more women, you know, having children, like I said, at any age, being more free to choose to stay home with their kids out of choice, not out of society thinks you ought to.
Right.
Or the husband taking care of the kids, you know. But also there's more single women with and without kids, and they have to now create a different kind of lifestyle than women have seen before 10 years ago.
Yeah.
We have to change our identity of what we think is possible as women, about ourselves, what we can do, what we can have.
I agree
that times have changed. Don't you see that, Laurie?
Oh, totally. Yeah, I mean, I can't say enough of how, you know, this is a really unique time for women in that, you know, it's never in history has there been so many single women. And it's, you know, it's really unique and it's a really interesting time. And I think it's, you know, just amazing.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
It is. Part of the work that I do, I specialize in two different things. And one is empowering women to have what they want. Secondarily, also natural weight loss and self-esteem issues if women want to work on that. And the third thing I do is I work with people, single people, on how to have deep abiding love in their life and attract a soulmate. And that is also what my work is. So in that work, assisting people in attracting a soulmate, I work with a lot of single, you know, women. They might have been either they're in their early 40s, late 30s, maybe they've never been married.
Mm-hmm.
They might have done their career first. Or they are in their early 40s typically, and they've been divorced. Their kids are teenagers, and they're wondering, you know, how to go to the next level or cycle, if you will, or phase of their life. And, you know, I heard Mark Victor Hansen say a couple months ago, he's around the same age I am, we're in our early 60s, and he looks fabulous, and he's vibrant and alive, and he said, you know, the us that are 60 now are like people who were 50 before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people who are 70 are like people who used to be 60. I really think in terms of our vibrancy and our health and what we expect of ourselves and what we're capable of, and just like him, he's, you know, on the road traveling around the world and full of vim and vigor, and you didn't see people that were 61 or 2 do that 20 years ago.
Yeah, it's a completely different world, isn't it?
It really is. It really is.
Mm-hmm. You keep talking about different things that you're doing. So when you said your first, what was your first thing that you enjoy? Empowering women. So this story, the book, that part of the book that you wrote, it's all about empowering women. And, you know, your story in it, you know, began the weight loss, and that is part of, you know, the journey that you're on, and so you can assist women in that and building confidence from within. What do you see when you think of those things and how they connect together? Like, how do you, I mean, they all really connect. They're certainly all for women, and it's all about, seeing possibilities and knowing that, you know, at any point in life, as you we talked about in our last show, you can find love, you can find a soulmate, you can find what you're looking for. What is it, do you think, women need to assist themselves to be free, or to, you know, to assist themselves to get to that place where they can see those potentials?
Well, one of the things that also happened to me just prior to where my story picks up, when my daughter and I had that conversation, I took, for the first time in my life, about 6 months prior to that, my first transformational or personal growth seminar, if you will, and it was an intensive. And one of the things that happened to me as a major, major shift inside myself in that seminar was a breakthrough in my thinking about how I thought I was limited because I hadn't gone to college. Mm-hmm. You know, I got married and had kids instead, and I did not go to college, and therefore I gave up my dream. Mm-hmm. And when I took that first personal growth seminar, I don't even remember who said what or how it happened, but I know I walked out of that seminar after 4 days, and I knew I could do anything, and yes, I hadn't gone to school. Hmm. And that I had a dream to be a teacher when I was in second grade and a therapist when I was in the eighth grade, and that somehow I could do those things, and I didn't know how I was going to do it, and that I could find my own way to do that rather than to have to do it by the way society had set it up to be done.
Right.
And I did not have a clue how that was going to happen, but the core of my being shifted so much from I can't and I never will be able to, as if I was a victim of, you know, the choice I made in high school, to I don't know how it's going to happen, but I know I can do it if I persist and, persist and persevere. And I can find my own path to that. And then in the next 6 months after that is when that happened, the story that I just told you. And when I went to that company and said, I'm going to teach your seminar, they didn't ask for a resume. They said, we want you to produce these results. Let's see if you can do that. And I'm great at producing results. Tell me what to do and I'll do it. And so it was a perfect setting for me, thank goodness, that they didn't have the normal criteria that corporations have, you know, out in the world.
Right.
And I really think I was guided to that place out of the shift that happened in me, which was I can do it and I have to find my own way, and I don't have a clue how to do that yet.
Right.
And I think I really was guided from on high, you know, in angels on my shoulder or something, where it unfolded organically, and I really did not know until it actually showed up in front of me how that was going to happen. But then when I looked back, I saw, Lori, that every single step along the way was like Hansel and Gretel and the breadcrumbs leading back home or something.
Mm-hmm.
It was leading to back home to who I really was. And I looked back and I saw every step was actually connected to the next step and the next step and the next step, and I didn't know it as I was going along. I think a key word is believing there's a way for each of us. And it doesn't have to be anybody's way but our own. That's the first thing. The second thing, I think, is being open to all possibilities coming, the universe delivering to you all possibilities. If we aren't awake and aware, we can have possibilities come right in our face and not even notice them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have to definitely be more awake than we have been in the past to see the possibilities all around us. And another word that's really important to me is then we have to be engaged. And that word means to me engaged fully in life, like for me to be engaged fully in my own life. And I think a large percentage of people aren't really fully engaged in their life. You know, they go through life predictably,
mm-hmm.
and by rote and by habit. And when I say fully engaged, I don't just mean going out to an event or something. I mean being vital and alive and well and on a continuum sort of creativity and seeing my life as an unfolding before me. And it can't unfold before me in an evolving way unless I fully engage in life.
Hmm. And with that, I guess, you know, you have a website that is venusproject.homestead.com where, you know, it's about finding the juicy you, and part of that is being, I guess, engaged. But, you know, what do you mean when you say a juicy life?
I just love that phrase.
Me too.
I know people sometimes misunderstand what it might mean, but, excuse me, a juicy life to me is being vital and alive about everything. So juicy is to me like passionate, but it's even more than passionate. Juicy to me is like the word delicious comes to mind.
Mm.
Finding the things in our lives that are delicious to us. So an example to me is that after my husband transitioned, I decided that I was going to give myself the love of my life, which are horses. Mm. And I went out after my husband died and I bought horses for myself. And I got a really small life insurance, like $10,000. I should have taken it and paid bills and things, and I didn't. I went and bought two horses and saddles. And, excuse me, the primary reason was I love horses and I never thought I could afford any. The second was my daughters were grown women when my husband passed away, their father, and they used to ride horses when they were teenagers with me, and then we hadn't ridden for 30 years. So I brought horses back into my life, and two of them, as a matter of fact, so that my daughters would come and ride with me like they did when they were teenagers, because that wasn't a project that we did that my husband was involved in. It was one for me and my two daughters, you know,
mm-hmm.
the girls. So I brought horses back into my life. And to me, the way I feel about, I keep my horse on a mountain 10 minutes from my house. Mm. And, I mean, I'll cut out going to the movies if I need to, my horse, and the deliciousness of riding my horse up in the mountains 10 minutes from my house. And right now there's wildflowers and forests and waterfalls and views for 100 miles. And I can go on the same day that I work and ride my horse for 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is, it's delicious. It supports so much harmony and balance in my life and well-being. It's been like having therapy in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And then I come back home and I take my jeans off and my cowboy boots on and, you know, put high heels on and the dress up clothes and go to work. And those two juxtapositions are so different. You know, I drive a pickup truck and I drive a small BMW. And those are two sides of myself that are both delicious and important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is also a good example of being fully engaged. You know, meaning, you know, I work and I love my work. I love being with my kids and my grandkids. I love riding my horse, and I love having men friends. I've had two soulmates in my life and been very fortunate, although they both transitioned. So right now I'm single again. But all those things are, it's really important for a woman to take a look at what feels delicious. What could they bring in their life that is multi-dimensional on the sensory level? So when I think of my work, and I'm sure, Laura, this is probably true for you with your work also, you know, I can't wait to be with one of my clients. It's engaging. I'm very fortunate that I have work that I love and that I have clients that I love. So when I look at my day, you know, I spend time alone, you know, meditating and reading and doing things like that, and I spend time on the mountain with my horse, with friends or by myself. I'm raising my grandchildren, so I have my grandchildren around. And each of the aspects of my life, I love, and for different reasons. And they create a balanced, not only a balanced life, but a balance of different kinds of feelings inside myself. You know, in other words, the feelings I get from being with clients that I love is very different than being in the woods with my horse.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a juicy life is having different aspects of our life, doing different things, each of which brings a different kind of wonderful, juicy experience.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned about play, passion, and purpose. I think, you know, often on this life we seem to think and take everything so seriously, and we really need to learn how to play. And so definitely as you talk about this, you're talking about, you know, with your horses and even with your work, it's about play. And I think, you know, not enough women seem to do that. Passion and purpose. Talk about all of these concepts.
You know, it's so true what you just said. And I remember once my grandson, when he was about 5 years old, he said he didn't want to be a grown-up because it looked too serious. And it didn't look like it would be fun. And boy, did that set me back, because at the time I loved my job.
Right.
And I thought, gee, am I presenting it as if it's this serious thing, you know? And I guess I wasn't, how can I put it, expressing how much I loved it. And maybe, of course, to a five-year-old it didn't look like play, but and then when he turned 15, he told me he wanted to do the same work that I do, which cracks me up. But play, in a lot of the work I do, I help people find their inner child. And we hear a lot about, you know, the inner child. And really, the inner child is, to me, it's an archetype that lives within each of us, and what that archetype holds within each of us is our perfect joy and vitality and aliveness. That's that part of me inside of me I'm just calling my inner child. What the inner child also holds, though, are the hurts and wounds of my childhood. And the hurts and wounds of my childhood will suppress my ability to play. Because that part of myself is too fearful to take a lot of risks to be free and be joyful. You know, once I heard a therapist talk that did this particular kind of work where she had people lay on the floor and have their body, adults lay on the floor and have their body position be like an infant. And then as an infant gets to be, they crawl, and then they, you know, they sit up, and you know, then they crawl, and then they walk, and so on and so forth. that each of those levels of a different body movement from infancy up to being 4 years old or something has a different development in your brain, which I didn't know this. And if a baby skipped over crawling, let's say, then a particular part of their brain wouldn't be developed.
Mm.
And I found it quite interesting because I never, I didn't walk till I was way older than a normal child, and I didn't crawl like a normal child. Mm. So this therapy, when you do it as an adult, it can help fill in those spaces of development in your brain to go back through the paces of the same body motions. The reason I bring it up is the last one in the set is skipping.
Uh-huh.
And when you see a child on their own skip, that is the epitome for a child of being free.
Yeah.
And being joyful and not being scared or worried about anything. And after I heard that, I remember the first time I saw my 4-year-old skip on his own. I cannot tell you how happy I was.
Mm-hmm.
It was a sign of, you know, natural joy and health and well-being in a 4-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
So in this therapy, they have adult skip. And it's amazing. It's hard to do.
Yeah.
As an adult, it's a good thing to practice because it brings through the whole system this sense in our whole body and our nervous system and so forth, a sense of freedom. And that's what we it's essential for us to go back to that place in which our free, our inner child can be freed. And we might have to, you know, tap into letting ourselves do things that are silly or do something we always wanted to do as a child and we never let ourselves do, or, you know, find a friend that is a pretty free, outrageous, playful person. I know in my own life I have different women friends, and I offer your audience and you as well to take a look. When you think of your different women friends, aren't there some that you feel like you can go play and have an outrageous fun time, and others that you enjoy, but play isn't what you think of doing with them?
Absolutely, yes.
I have both of my daughters, actually, thank goodness, and then one other really good friend that when I think of traveling to have fun, those are the three women I think of. Now, I have other friends I travel with once in a great while, but I don't think of it being fun particularly.
Hmm.
It might be interesting or enjoyable, but not spontaneous and, you know, go skip on the beach or, you know, let's go out dancing tonight and act silly together or something.
Hmm.
So we need to have some playmates, playmates in our lives that are people that can let go and not be fearful and be spontaneous and outrageous, you know. And other times during their week or their month, they're also grounded and, you know, responsible people, but that they know how to let go and be playful and have fun. And that, to me, is part of the juicy life, and it feeds that part of myself that also needs to be fed for me to be balanced inside.
Right.
And then the second one is passion. And I'm not looking at passion in the same category like play. Play to me is being alive and vital and joyful,
mm-hmm.
with maybe no framework around it. Whereas passion, I'm putting more in a category of maybe your passions that are your life work, that you can express in your life work. Passion to me is also things like, what do I feel passionate about that I want to be a stand for or be a voice for in the world?
Hmm.
You know, what is, if I was going to pick one thing, what is something that I feel deeply about and that's really important to me? That to me can also be an example, not the only example, but an example of a passion.
Right.
Like right now, I'm teaching workshops that are weekend intensives for 3 days called Live Your Vision, and it's for kids from 16 to 25. So they're from high school through college age, typically.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an intensive where they learn how to think like the law of attraction, you know, and other principles similar to that. So they are actually learning how to be conscious creators of their life. And they tap in and discover their own personal power, and they create their purpose in life and their vision for the life they want and the direction they want. And I did one of these workshops about a month and a half ago, and I've never done them with this, only with this age group before. I've only done it with, you know, grown-ups. And Lori, it was the most exciting, it's the most inspiring thing I've ever taught. And the kids in it ranged from 16 to 25. And on that Sunday afternoon, they said things like, I feel like I got a kickstart on my whole life. Another one said, I now can see I can start living the things I only used to wish about. All of them left knowing they didn't have to be a victim of their circumstance, that they could go out and move forward and not repeat the history of their parents. Out of the kids, 90% of them in the class did not have married parents. 90% of them, you know, their parents were divorced. Probably 40% of them lived in other circumstances than with even one of their single parents.
Right.
Some lived with their grandparents. Some lived with their friends. And most of them had a story they could tell that would be, you know, I've had this hardship in my childhood or my teen years because of my family circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And that could definitely have limited them for the rest of their life and the way they thought about themselves. You know, and the next day after class, one of the boys that had learning problems and barely graduated out of high school, he didn't drive, and he walked in the rain and put out 20 resumes and got a job 2 days later, and he'd never worked in his life.
Wow.
And he, I think, he had been staying home, doing nothing, and feeling like because he had learning problems, he didn't even think he could get a job.
Right.
Now, for me, doing this work right now, it's a little pocket of a part of my work. I feel passionate about it. And in the moment right now, I feel moved to have almost a new stand in my life, to be a stand for, you know, the 20-year-old in the world. That they can learn about higher consciousness and learn how to utilize the highest and best parts of themselves. The principles that I teach in this seminar are very quite esoteric, and I didn't know if kids in this age range could understand it, and I'm telling you, they understood it and put it to work, and they got out 2 hours early every day as compared to adults. So that to me is an example of a passion, and a passion doesn't have to take the form of work, you know, per se at all, but something that feels important to us. And then purpose. Purpose is, why am I here on the planet? That would be my life purpose. Why am I here? God put me here for a reason. I wonder what it is.
Right.
And that I want to be used. You know, I want to be all used up when I die, one of those. My personal belief is that there is a special place and a unique being inside of every single person, and that we have been gifted from on high the perfect gifts and talents and capabilities to play our own unique, significant part in the bigger whole, in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And part of what I do is help people find their life purpose, because when we get out of bed in the morning with a sense of purpose, and that purpose can be about our whole life, you know, my life purpose, or I can also have a purpose about what's my purpose in my work. I have a purpose in my work. I also have an over a broader purpose. That's my purpose in my life, and it really delineates where I come from, everywhere I go in my life, all throughout the day, to be on purpose. And being on purpose for me is being engaged consciously with everyone I meet.
Right.
And feel that connection, and that out of that, both of us are better for it. And that isn't just going to work and doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that happens in the grocery store also.
Right.
And actually, let me mention, on my website, and I'll give the website in a moment here, on my website there is a free recorded teleclass. It's a teleclass I did on Discover Your Life Purpose in an Hour. And I had, you know, a group of people on the line, and we recorded it. And if they go to my website and click on free audios, it takes them to a page where they can choose from three different recorded audios, one of which is Discover Your Life Purpose in an Hour. And when you click on that, you get an hour recorded class. It's actually an hour and 20 minutes, and worksheets that will download. And anyone can listen in on their telephone, and through their computer, they can listen in, listen to the class, and be doing the worksheets right along with listening to the recording. And at the end of an hour and 20 minutes, have their first draft of a statement of their purpose in life.
Wow.
And it's free.
Nice.
So I highly recommend anybody listening that wants to know why they're here to partake. And the website URL is lifetimeloveconnection.com with no S on it, lifetimeloveconnection.com. And then when the first page comes up, look for free audios, and it will take you there.
Nice. Okay, well, let's talk now about, and I assume this is all part of the same thing, but owning our beauty, personal power, and our authentic voice.
Yes, that's just so important to me, those three things. And all three of them go back to my experience that I said about get a life. All three of those things happened as a result of that breakthrough that I had. So what I mean by that is, so for example, owning my beauty, as an example, when I lost that weight, certainly I felt better about myself, being a more natural size. But I never had before that really seen myself as pretty, if you will. But definitely when I lost weight, I liked my body better. And when I started owning my personal power, what happened as a natural result, Lori, actually was, you know, my spiritual inner work began unfolding more, and I began to realize what beauty really is radiance. It's not what do my eyes look like or what does my nose look like, which is what society would have us think, you know, that we have to have the perfect face and the perfect this and the perfect that. And that really isn't truly what beauty is. Radiance from a spiritual opening and a smile, a radiant smile, that's what beauty really is. And that's what attracts people to look at us or smile at us or say hello to us, even though they're strangers. It's like a moth to the light. So owning one's beauty to me is knowing my beauty does come from the inside, and to the degree I'm open and engaged in life, it radiates out from me for others to connect with.
Right.
And be attracted to, if you will.
Right.
So that's the first piece. It is connected to the second and the third piece, the personal power. People are, I'm teaching a class right now called The Wonder of Women. And we just were talking the other night about what is personal power. And there are so many, what can I say, confused definitions, if you will, especially for women, about what is personal power. And I think it's a from the years gone by of 25 years ago or something, where we thought men had all the power and somehow they had the power over us, especially if you think about corporate America, or even, you know, a macho husband and a wife that's the little woman, stay in the kitchen and cook. That personal power was thought more as power over another.
Right.
And the women in this class started talking about, they didn't even want to say the word because they thought it sounded like something negative.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like saying the word assertive, but you think of it being the word aggressive,
mm-hmm.
you know, which has this negative connotation, of course, to be aggressive.
Yeah.
And some people have taken the assertive, and they're afraid assertive means aggressive,
mm-hmm.
and they don't want to be that. Well, I think it's the same confusion about the idea of personal power. So what personal power is to me isn't power over anyone. It's dominion over myself, meaning owning my own personal power would mean I can create, I am a creator, and I can create anything I intend to create. So we equally, men or women, all have available to us the same life force streaming through us. And it doesn't matter the gender. So in other words, you and I would have the same potential of personal power internally as any other man, you know, or other women standing next to us, that we're all born equal in that way, of having an equal amount of personal power. I call it spiritualized energy that flows through us and that is available for us to use to create our life with. So to the degree I have thoughts that are about what I want to create, and to the degree I'm able to match it congruently with feelings of believing I can create that, I am powerful, meaning I am powerful to create my life the way I want it.
You know, I think about personal power for women too, and lately it has come up a lot. And I think, you know, the collective unconscious, that when we're born into this planet, we sort of get downloaded with. And in the past, women who have any personal power, who have, you know, connected with their own personal power, were persecuted. And so I think there are a lot of women that are truly terrified of doing that, not consciously, but unconsciously, because it's part of the collective unconscious. So, you know, learning how to face that and understand it and to realize that it's all illusion is part of it, I think, as well.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Well, if a picture in that I draw on a flip chart and it's in my head, it's like imprinted in my head, of personal power would be, if you think of yourself as a conduit, like a, you know, like a pipe on a, I draw a pipe up on a flip chart, right? And with a head on top of it, and then spiritual energy coming in through the top of one's head.
Mm-hmm.
And that spiritual energy goes through our consciousness, through our thoughts, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes down through our entire torso of our body, and it goes through our heart and our solar plexus. Right?
Right.
And then out our arms and our legs, meaning into the world, into action.
Mm.
Okay. To the degree we are an open conduit.
Right.
And have thoughts in our mind and consciousness about what we want to create, like a higher vision or whatever, and let that spiritual energy flow through into our torso of our body and our heart, meaning feeling our passion, then that ignites our actions out into the world to then attract to us like kind to the picture we have held in our mind. So if you picture that open conduit, if it has thoughts that are negative and limited and fearful, then up at the top of the conduit where our head is, it's constricted and tightened and smaller.
Hmm.
And so less spiritualized energy can flow through us to create what we want. So if that energy comes through my head and I'm filled with fear, then when that energy gets into my body, it's restricted.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the vibration of fear in my body, and I get immobilized and I can't act. So for us to, quote unquote, own our personal power, what I would have to work on is, what are my restricted thoughts that are constricting the flow? You know, what are my limited thinking about my own beliefs about myself,
mm-hmm.
that are constricting that natural flow that is my God-given right to own and create the world around me?
Mm-hmm.
And we need role models, you know, Laura, just like you said, we've been downloaded at birth.
Yeah.
Well, I'm probably a whole generation older than you. You better believe I've had some downloads. although I have to say I had some good role models even at the age I am. My grandmother was the president of her group of League of Women Voters, and that was in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
But she had women over for tea, and they played bridge. And she, you know, she didn't work, and she cooked in the kitchen. But she was president of the League of Women Voters.
That's great.
So I did have some role models that I was very lucky to have. But so, and then the third section is our authentic voice. So if I'm going to actually begin to hold the idea that I can create what I want, then I need to know what I want.
Right.
So having my authentic voice in my mind means, you know, not being afraid to say what's important to me, not be afraid to be the stand for something that is of significance to me,
mm-hmm.
to begin to believe what I have to say and how I feel and what I think is important, that it can make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't need to be in a big way out in the world. It can be just make a difference in our own families if we're being authentic. Because our authentic self is filled with wonderful gifts and talents and passions and wisdom and things that are of value to everyone around us.
Right. Well, you've certainly given us a lot of information, and I think, you know, the more we talk about these topics, the more women, you know, understand our potential and look at those limiting beliefs, as you say. I think the more we can really, you know, connect in with who we truly are and live that life that we were meant to live.
Exactly. Exactly. I think it's good for all of us to go back and look. Was there some dream we had? You know, I had a wonderful second grade teacher, and I remember I just thought she was the apple of my eye, and I decided I wanted to be a teacher because she was so wonderful.
Hmm.
Well, it did turn out as a grown-up that one of my gifts was teaching. And I think, you know, somebody on high there actually that knew more about me than I knew about myself when I was in second grade put that little seed and that teacher in my life for a reason.
And we don't
so
often get
to look back at our dreams. Do we have lost dreams?
Yeah.
And resurrect them.
Yeah. And that's really an important piece, is we don't often get the opportunity to, you know, to look back and to really, you know, look at those things that we knew were part of who we were at a young age, which is usually how it works, because those are the seeds that get planted, and those are, you know, when we're younger, we tend to be more connected. And as fear and life sort of happens and we get caught up unconsciously, we sort of move away from that. But if we can remember who we were as children, it usually has a lot of our gifts present.
Exactly. You know, and I find with people doing their purpose that quite often their purpose unfolds to be something that is helping something that happened to them in their childhood.
Mm.
You know, like maybe somebody's parent died when they were a child and they become a nurse. Or, you know, for me, in the eighth grade, I needed counseling because of a situation with my father, and I had a terrible counselor. And I remember in the eighth grade making a decision, when I grow up, I'm going to be a therapist, and I'm going to make sure parents are better parents than my parents are.
Hmm.
And that teenagers that have a life like this and grow up into being an adult and they're wounded, I'm going to be a counselor and help those people.
Hmm.
So I think quite often our life purpose or our life work becomes something that we're trying to heal or fix from our childhood.
Absolutely.
And that's a good place to look for where, you know, where is the stand I want to make.
Hmm. Well, Kathleen, it's been a great pleasure. The hour went by very quickly. And
it sure did.
It did, didn't it?
It did. Thank you so much. I really enjoy always talking to you, Lori.
You're welcome. And
I think we're soul sisters on some level.
Absolutely. Well, I look.
So thank you for having me. And again, the book is Wake Up Women, Be Happy, Healthy, and Wealthy. And one can order it on my website if they wish under resources. They can order the book and get a CD that I've made to come with it. So
nice.
I appreciate very much you having me. And if anybody wants to get a hold of me, can I
absolutely
tell them how to do that?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. My phone number is 925-674-9003, 925-674-9003, and I do telephone coaching with people all over the country, so it doesn't matter where people live. And you can go on my website again, lifetimeloveconnection.com, and you'll see there where you can contact me through the email. If you wish to email me, feel free to ask me anything you wish.
Okay.
Well, so again, thank you so much, Lori.
You're welcome. I look forward to connecting with you again soon.
Yes, very, very much. And have a good holiday.
You too. Yes, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.